Okay, welcome back to ENCE 353. And today we're going to look at two topics, connecting analysis to structural design and a very gentle introduction to the theory of structures and statically determinate and indeterminate structures. So let me share the screen. Let's see, here we go. Okay. Let me make the screen a bit bigger. Right. So today, as I said, we're going to look at two topics, connecting analysis to structural design and theory of structures. And as a gentle reminder, let me scoot down. So this whole story begins with structural mechanics. Okay. So this is the study of the relationship between stress and strain at a pretty infinitesimal scale. And in our particular case, we're interested in structural mechanics, but as I mentioned in the past lectures, you can have geomechanics, fluid mechanics, biomechanics, all kinds of things. And from an analysis standpoint, there is a pretty well-defined pathway from the material level response to the section response, to the beam response, and then finally you can assemble stuff into the building system response. And the way this kind of works is you go from one stage to the next stage by carrying out some sort of integration. Okay, so I can integrate the material response to get the section response, integrate along the element length to get the beam response, and then I can take the individual beam elements, which are described in terms of their deflection and their end rotation, and assemble them together to have some sort of building response. And so from a design standpoint, what we're really interested in is understanding what the characteristics of the building response are going to be and how I can make decisions to get the right sort of building response by tracing things back to the stresses and the strains. Okay, so clearly the response I'm going to get on the right-hand side is going to depend on the choice of material. And so this sort of leads to a pathway from analysis to design. And at the end of last time, I mentioned, okay, so in order for this integration pathway to work well, if you want to do just straight analytical procedures, the math needs to be pretty nice and convenient. But in practical terms, that's never always the case. And so you have to rely on numerical analysis procedures. Oh, I see a spelling mistake to fix that. And compute approximate procedures. And all of those things are guided by linear algebra, numerical algorithms, structural analysis, and then eventually finite elements. Okay, so today we're going to focus primarily on what kind of things you need to think about in terms of connecting analysis to design. So this is a bit of a look into the future, right? So the procedure for creating an analysis model is roughly as follows. So if you look at this picture, you know, here's a picture of a pretty complicated building structure. And if I say I want to create a model, I'm going to look at that real world model and I'm thinking, okay, I need a mathematical model to capture the details. Well, why do I need the mathematical model? Well, presumably downstream, I want to make some sort of decisions. So there's too much going on to take in for my mathematical model to take into every possibility of what's happening. So I'm going to do what's called abstraction. Abstraction means basically look at the real world structure, take the pieces that you think are important for decision making, and just leave the rest behind. Okay, so I'm just, you know, pulling out the pieces that are most relevant to what I think that are going to be needed for decision making. I'm going to build my mathematical model. I'm going to do some sort of simulation or analysis, and that the output of the analysis is going to give me some sort of estimate of system state or perhaps behavior. I'm going to look at the parameters. There's going to be some decision making. And then the output of the decision making will be some sort of required changes. So you might decide, for example, well, okay, the displacements are a little high. Maybe I need to change the dimensions of some of the beams and the columns to reduce them. Okay. And so there's an additional leg here. It's called validation. So validation basically means, okay, so I carry out the abstraction to get my mathematical model. And then there's a step that basically says, is my mathematical model sufficiently complicated or detailed to actually, you know, genuinely represent what's happening in the real world structure? And so it's important to keep in mind that the mathematical model does not need to be perfect, okay? And in fact, from an analysis standpoint, you want to keep the model as simple as possible, just include just enough detail to capture the important parts and no more, right? So in terms of the big picture here, the mathematical model is going to support the analysis and the decision-making procedures are going to support the design, okay? So as I say on the left-hand side here, things don't need to be perfect. An approximation is good enough. Right. So then the next question is, well, what exactly is structural design? So you can think of, in an abstract sense, you can think of design as being a sequence of decisions punctuated by analysis, okay? And so when I'm designing a structure, I'm going to make a sequence of decisions that are essentially going to eliminate possibilities in my design space, okay? Or delve into more details in terms of what the actual behavior is going to be, more detailed analysis. But this is essentially what it is. It's just a sequence of decisions punctuated by analysis. And so the analysis is going to, you know, it's going to be relevant to the stage at hand in the design, okay? So initially, you're going to determine the types and the magnitude of the loads and the forces acting on the structure. So we talked about that in the first two lectures. Then you're going to determine the context of the project, right? Okay, so what kinds of geometric constraints exist? What kind of architectural constraints, geological constraints? There may be urban regulations that prevent you from doing certain things. And then the stakeholders may have constraints on cost and schedule and so forth. And so what you typically would do in design is generate a set of system alternatives, analyze one or more of the alternatives that look attractive, and then select one or two of them for detailed design. And then finally, once you settle on something, go ahead, implement, and build it, okay? And so that roughly speaking is like the process. And so one thing about this process that kind of complicates things is that there's a lot of uncertainties involved in this process. There's uncertainties in the magnitude of the loads. There's uncertainties in the actual properties of the materials, okay, in the structure. There's uncertainties in the way the structure is actually going to be built, the construction processes. And so to do a very rigorous analysis is, you know, could become prohibitively complicated. So what people do instead is they simplify the process by compensating for the uncertainties with safety factors. So you'll estimate what you think the dead and the live loads are, and then multiply them by a safety factor to basically, you know, come up with a conservative estimate. So you might say something like, well, I'm going to take the dead load, multiply that by 1.4, take the live load, multiply that by 1.7, and that's going to be my design load, okay? So this makes the whole design process much simpler than it would otherwise be. But this only works if you are designing a structure that's, you know, been designed many times before. And so over time, new types of structural systems come along, and you can't just, you know, propose something and just start building. You actually have to verify that the idea will work. And so that can involve experimental testing and not only to verify behavior, but to see what achievable levels of system performance might be. Okay. So there's actually lots of interesting things that you can do as part of the design process. Right. So as I mentioned, right, as I go from the real world structure to the mathematical model, we're going to use an analysis idealized abstraction. So this is here's a picture of on the left-hand side of something that looks like the real-world implementation. And on the right-hand side is the idealized structure, okay? So you can see from a mathematical standpoint, there are many things are going to be left behind, and the mathematical model is going to be a simplification of the of what's actually happening in the real world. But you would be surprised, even though it looks like it, even though it is an approximation, it can still give a reasonable estimate of what the distribution of forces are going to be deflections and so forth. Right. So how am I going to use this procedure for design? Okay, so connecting analysis to design. So formal approaches to behavior modeling and decision making, they use two things. One, they rely on sets of mathematical equations to describe the behavior of the system. Okay, so you should be thinking, okay, I'm going to compute the structural behavior, and it's going to that behavior is going to correspond to the solution of differential equations. So this is one reason why, you know, engineers spend so much time talking about differential equations, because that's the pathway to understanding structural behavior. And so that's kind of a, you know, numerical analysis type problem. But in design, I also have the issue that I need to make to propose structural system alternatives. I need to make, you know, select certain ones for further details. And this notion of selecting stuff and leaving other options behind is essentially a multi-valued logic problem. Okay, so design is actually a combination of solving differential equations and implicitly, you know, discarding options and pushing other alternatives forward. So what does the differential equations look like? What do they look like? Okay. So this isn't a general equation to describe the time-dependent behavior of solutions, okay, of equations. So here we have a second order differential equation. So let me walk through I'll start on the right-hand side and walk to the left-hand side. So P of t is going to be some sort of vector, maybe say n by one vector of some form of external loads, okay? K is going to be an n by n matrix of, that's going to capture the geometry, the material properties, the boundary conditions, and so forth. And so if I just solve this set of equations, Kx equals P, this part of the problem here is essentially what ENCE353 and ENCE453 are all about, okay? In 353, we basically just have the individual equations and the and everything we look at is kind of tiny. In 453, the scale of the problems will be increased. And then you realize, wait a minute, I can't work with individual equations any longer. I'm gonna have to put things in matrix format and then use linear algebra and, you know, tools like MATLAB to solve for displacements. Okay, so X corresponds to the displacement, K captures the geometry, and P is all the loads. And so for undergraduate, this is essentially the scope of what you would study as an undergraduate. If you choose to come back to graduate school, you can add on additional terms for dynamics. Okay, so this term here, Cx dot, this is the set of four forces for that are due to damping in the structure. And this term here, Mx double dot, they're the forces due to inertia, okay, Mx double dot. So all in all, what this set of differential equations describe is equations of equilibrium for situations that are dynamic. And we just simplify things in certain ways. So from a design, so that's from an analysis standpoint. And so, yeah, that's from an analysis standpoint. And from a design standpoint, what you're interested in is making the selection of the structural system parameters, which are going to affect the coefficients of the matrices that are in these matrices here, Kx equal P. And that's essentially what 453 is. How do I get from the selection of certain elements, their section properties, material properties, and then build a pathway from that trail of thinking into the properties of this matrix K? And then, of course, you just use MATLAB to solve it. Right. Okay. So the next topic is theory of structures. And if you go back to the first lecture, you'll see that theories of structures is really about trying to understand structures that are statically determinant and statically indeterminate. Okay. So statically determinant structures. This is actually pretty simple. You can use statics to determine the reactions and distribution of element level forces. Determinacy is not affected by the details of loading. Okay, so in two dimensions, you have three equations, the sum of forces in the x and the y directions equal to zero, plus the sum of the moments about any point is also going to be equal to zero. So what statics gives you is three sets of independent equations, okay? You can't take the moments about multiple points, okay? You just have to choose a point. It doesn't really matter what point you choose, but you get one equation to take moments. And in three dimensions, this idea extends to three equations of translational equilibrium and three equations of rotational equilibrium. So you have, that's equations two and three. So in this class, we're pretty much just going to stick to two-dimensional structures because three-dimensional structures just becomes a little unwieldy. Right. So let me show you a few examples of statically determinate structures. Okay. So here's just a simply supported beam with two loads. And there are three equations of equilibrium, sum of f of x equals zero, sum of f of y is equal to zero. And, that should be fixed as well. The sum of the moments is equal to zero. And we have three unknowns, VA, HA, and VB. And so we have three unknowns, three equations of equilibrium, and we can use statics to solve. So that's all good. Let me show you my second structure. Okay, so here's a small truss structure. There are three reactions, HA, VA, and VB. We can use statics to support the reactions VA, HA, and VB. And then what you can do is you can systematically extract small parts of the structure, okay, individual joints, and look at the equilibrium on these joints to determine what the distribution of member forces is going to be, okay? And so, of course, that's the next topic we have to look at is, okay, under what conditions can I actually extract the individual joints and get a unique solution. Okay. So there are two examples of determinate structures. And an indeterminate structure has the property, okay, statics alone are not enough to find the reactions. So in other words, you have too many unknowns. And so to bridge that gap, you have to go out and find additional information. And normally what you do is you do that by resorting to some piece of information that's associated with the material behavior. So here, this shows the simply supported beam. And all I've done is change the boundary condition on the right-hand side to go from a roller to something where there's restraint in the horizontal direction, okay? So now I actually have three equations of equilibrium and I have four unknowns. Okay, VA, HA, VB, HB. And so the number of unknown forces is four and the number of available equations is three. And so this is what we call statically indeterminate to degree one. You can have indeterminate structures in a number of ways. Here's an example of a two-span beam with two rollers. And again, the number of unknowns is four, and the number of available equations is three. So this example is also statically indeterminate to degree one. Finally, you can have indeterminacy because you have force displacement relationships that involve the properties of multiple materials. So if I have, two materials, material A and B, each material has its own stress-strain relationship, and then I take those materials and I put them into a composite structure like this. Then and then I pull it. Okay, there's a compatibility relationship that needs to be respected. Okay, so if the length of the structure elongates, then However, the change in displacement for material A has to be the same as the change in displacement for material B. So that means that if the stress strain characteristics of these two materials are different, you can't just automatically assume that the total load P will be carried equally by these three elements, right? Material B may carry a larger proportion of the loads than material A. And it all ties back to the mechanics of stress versus strength. Okay, so that lecture was a little bit short, but There's a lot of important properties there. And stay tuned for the next lecture where we will talk about simplifying assumptions that will be employed in this class.